Menards is your one-stop shop for all your summer essentials. Whether you're stocking up on everyone's favorite snacks, making a patio perfect for entertaining family and friends, or getting ready to gather around the grill, Menards has everything you need for your get-togethers all summer long. Save big money now at Menards. Plus, don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save
big money at Menards. Big color, bigger savings. Sherwin-Williams Super Sale is here. Get 40% off paints and stains June 5th through the 11th with prices starting at $38.89. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only, some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Hello and welcome back to another Radio Roundup from the Sunday Podcast, brought to you guys by sportshoes.com. As always, Matt, we have a load of Diamond League action to talk about, don't we? Listener is ringing in about 10 minutes now, who is at Stockholm. So we'll save that for 10 minutes. But I know all of you listening will want to hear what we have to say about Keely and Wero, I'm sure. But mate, we better start with Rome because we've not chatted about that yet.
Yeah, wind back the tapes, hey? Like, Busy week in track and field for sure. And yeah, Rome last week, Paavo Nurmi as well. Some interesting results in that. Mills didn't race Paavo Nurmi, which that was probably the one athlete initially when I saw him on the start list. I was looking forward to seeing how he goes, George Mills, but yeah, chose not to race there. But yeah, where should we start with that 400 of Keely? Because I feel like that then set her up for Stockholm. And I think it was clear in that 400 that the problem an 800 runner has when they do a 400 is that initial, when you race against 400 specialists, is obviously the start, right? You don't get out as well. And then it's how that impacts you. And it just looked like Keely, obviously they stole a couple yards on her in that first 80 meters, you know, first 100 meters. And then you could just see her tense up on the backstretch. You know, she's panicking. She's thinking, I'm going to get back to these girls. And once she really wasn't in contact with them, even at 200, even at 250. And then you knew it was going to be a tough day for her. And I think there is a lot. She's worth more than that 51 low that she ran. She's quicker than that. But I just think in a race of that caliber, like, she'd probably run faster in a bit more of a relaxed setting. Let's say if she did a 400 domestically in a British race, I think she'd be a lot more relaxed. She'd be competing. She'd probably be winning it. And she'd have a better, slightly better lane draw, these sorts of things. The track wouldn't be as fast. The conditions wouldn't be as good. So maybe there is a trade-off there. But you could just tell she tensed up on the back stretch a bit and not, maybe panic's the wrong word, but it was difficult for her to ever get involved in this race. And I think that just set her back a little bit.
Yeah, I think you're bang on, mate. She's up against real technicians in terms of at the elite end of 400 meter running. So the way in which they come out of the blocks, et cetera, the way in which they pace the race compared to someone like Keely. And I know she would do some good 400 meter training, but ultimately, like, she's a middle distance runner and she's not going to have the same technical tactical appreciation for that event as some of those women in that race. So yeah, I think you're right. I almost think if she wasn't so high profile, you go down Watford and run a mixed 400 meters, right? Get in the A race on a Wednesday, just in the open meet, and she'd probably run quicker than that.
Yeah, it always amazed me when I was surprised that she wanted to commit to such a high profile 400, because I think as long as, you know, I get Trevor and Jenny's point of we've got to be faster over 400, we've got to be running 50 point, maybe even a bit quicker, you know, sub 50 if we're going to break this world record, etc. But as long as you're capable of it, does it really matter if you put it out in a race? Like, does it matter if you have that black and white fact? Because I think it's much harder for an 800 runner to execute and run that 400 time they're capable of. Because again, they're only doing one. Yeah. Maybe Keely might do two a season, but that's not enough to go and get that perfect race and prove what you can do. And so as long as just physically they're capable of running that fast, it's kind of irrelevant what she runs.
But she doesn't ever race 15s. So this is what's given her that, I guess, slightly different stimulus, somewhere where she can run a bit more freely in terms of pressure. Because if she was doing a couple 1500s a season, you're then like, okay, well, she's getting that from somewhere else, whereas Keely doesn't do that. So the 400 meters is her place to race, even at a high profile, where there was relatively, like, there's always pressure when you're that good, but I think in comparison to when she's racing 800 meters, there's no pressure for her doing that race. And she'll have got a nice payday. She'll have created some, I guess, good stories around her in terms of promotion for her as an athlete. So there are plenty of positives to that.
Yeah, let me ask you this. Do you think Vera watched that race and said, ah, she's not as fast as I thought she was. I'm just as fast as her over 400. I know I'm in great shape. I'm going to make sure I go off like a bat out of hell on Sundays in Sunday's Diamond League and take this woman to the sword through that first 400. I wonder if Vera was thinking that, if that was the game plan.
Maybe. Because
and that she did. And
I think it all comes down to, because I think, like we said, if Keely runs 51.1 but comes first, second in a race, we're like...
Yeah, it's different. Yeah.
Whereas I think it's the manner, like you say, in which
there was
a
clear difference.
Which she got beat. Yeah. You're just showing that you are human, even though it's in a different event. You're showing that side to yourself.
It's almost better if you just let people speculate, right?
Yeah.
Perhaps. You have that.
Especially when there's all the talk about, I can't even remember her name.
Moore? Adira? Moore?
No. Who's stepping up to the 400? Four hurdles? Oh, my word.
Oh, Femke Bol.
Yeah. Femke Especially Bol. When there's all the talk about Femke Bol and taking on the 800. I think then when you start to then take yourself into the 400, you then highlight into people the disparity there, and then people are starting to realize how much of an advantage Femke has in that space.
Mm. Yeah, look, Keely's a purist 800 runner. She's exceptionally fast over 400. You have to be, but she is a purist 800 runner.
And what's PB though? That is the fastest she's run.
Exactly. Right. So she'll be happy with that. And I think she's obviously capable of quicker, but executing that and putting that into your race, putting that on paper is a difficult skill. And it's something that she doesn't need to chase. You know, she doesn't need to go and prove to the world that she can run 50 point or even break 50. Like, as long as she knows she's capable of it, that's all you need as an 800 runner. So I think she was, relatively content, maybe a bit frustrated, but it was, again, season opener for her. And then she gets stunned in Stockholm, which we'll talk about. But first, I want to just delve into, before we get Connor on here, about the Paavo Nurmi Games, 9 men dropping out of that 5K. That's the headline for me. 2 of them are pacemakers, so bit of injustice there. But 7 men drop out of a 5,000 gold labeled tour in Finland. And when we just, a couple of weeks ago, we're talking about how hard it is to get into races, how difficult it's going to be for athletes to break through. Once you get that opportunity, once you get that chance where you can run over 12 and a half laps in a gold label, there's points on offer, there's this fast race, it's 1 in 12:56, 12:57. And to drop out is tough. And it's someone... few listeners messaged in and they said, what's the consequence of dropping out? And there is no consequence of dropping out. And this is where the rankings, I think, are going to get very interesting if we continue to prioritize rankings and they only grow, is because in the 5,000, they take 2 performances. Mm. And they take your best 2 performances in a 12-month window? Something like that, or even less. And so... if your next performance is going to be Paavo Nurmi, you're on for a bad time or you're having a bad day, and that's going to then damage your ranking, that is the consequence that these men have. Yeah. So on the face of it, it looks like, they get away with it. But actually, it's going to get a point where people start to play this system and they realize that a slow time or a low finishing position might only give them 1,100 points, and that's going to pull their overall score down. Yeah, I don't think that's why they dropped out, but I'm just saying that could be something that happens in future.
No. Well, I think if they're going to take a bigger pool of performances, they need to start counting DNFs as a performance then.
Yeah, that would be cruel.
So you're taking 5 performances or 5 most recent or however you want to do it. But I guess if they're always taking the best performances...
They take Doesn't 3, sorry, not. For the 5,000, they take 3, 10K is 2. Okay. They take your top 3. But a lot of people...
doesn't matter. As long as you've still got 3 good ones, doesn't matter how many races you run bad in.
Well, yeah, that's as providing you've got three good ones. Because there's a point where those performances will drop out of your three good ones. Depending on, like, if you've done a 5K road in February.
Yeah.
And, you know, in that 12-month window, that is before the track season rolls around, that amazing 5K road time you ran is then going to drop out your rankings. So, but I don't think that's why they dropped out, but I thought that could be an interesting point going forward. People starting to get a bit worried about performances pulling down their ranking and slipping out of those top spots. But it was strange. Nick Griggs was pulled out with a lap to run. Mike Foppen pulled out with 250 to run. I think he had some medical complications on the track. Darren McElhenney dropped out. Mm. Rory Leonard dropped out. Philip Ingebrigtsen dropped out. There's a couple of Finnish athletes. They were way off it already, but dropped out. A couple of Kenyans as well. But I also feel like the reason so many men dropped out is because these races now are just set up in a way where it's 13 minutes on nothing. And everyone's just going in with the same approach. And it's like, you know for a fact that a lot of these guys, they need to... Then there was two wave lights. Don't get me wrong. There were two wave lights. There were two different races within this thing. But guys are just going... It's this all or nothing approach that we're seeing in the distance races now. Less so in the 8 and the 15 because it's not as... And there's far more depth, and doesn't matter if you're a second or two off at it at sort of 400, 500, 600 into the race, you still feel very much connected. But obviously those lap times make a big difference in a 5,000, and it is an all or nothing approach at the moment. People are just going, they just want to run as fast as possible. And it's like, how long can we run 13 minute pace? If we drop off, we'll worry about that when it happens.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, it's almost that Kenyan mentality, isn't it? We used to see in marathons all the time, where people are just like, get on it, and if it gets too quick, we're done. But like, just before we get Connor on to chat about Stockholm, we should probably say, it feels like ages ago now, like you said at the start, mate, Georgia Bell, really classy performance, over 1500 meters in Rome, to take the win, 358. And yeah, looked pretty in control, I thought, mate. And nice start for her. And again,
oh, really good.
Going to be a real one for her. Like, is it the 8? Is it the 15? I mean, I guess, looking at Vero and Keeley's race, we're probably going to suggest maybe the 15 is the one. But Georgia Hunter Bell always surprises us, I think, with how good she is at 800 meters as well.
Yeah, Georgia will want to win gold over the 1500, and she should be able to quite comfortably at the Europeans. I mean, that was a mega last lap from her. I think that's where we'll see her at the Europeans. Mm. Is that your question?
Yeah, Europeans or just in general going forward, I think, as well. Like, is she going to remain doing both, changing in between, or is she going to be like, no, I'm going to lock in for the next cycle as I'm a 15 runner?
I think we will see her as a 1500 runner. Said to you before, I'm not sure Kip Yegon goes to LA in the 15. If she does, it's going to be a very different Kip Yegon to what we've seen. I think we'll see Kip Yegon 5:10, I possibly even marathon in LA, just something new for her. To keep her motivated. I mean, she's been at it for so long over the 1500. So yeah, the 1500 for me is wide open. And yes, girls are running fast, but actually it's very competitive. There's no dominant figure, or at least I don't think there will be a dominant figure running 349, 350 like Kip Yegon has done over the last few years. I think it will be, you know, loads of women in around 354, 355. And Georgia's best placed as any to go and claim world champs gold, Olympic gold. I think she's going to be in a great spot. But saying that, she's a silver medalist over the 800, right? So,
yeah, exactly. There you have it. Right, let's talk about Stockholm. Let's get Connor on the call.
Hey, mate, Connor.
Cheers.
Yeah, and you, how's things?
Good, thanks very much for having me on.
Yeah, not at all. We've just been chatting about Rome. But obviously you're in Stockholm, and apparently you're going to Oslo tonight as well, is that right?
I'm currently in Oslo.
Yeah, you're in Oslo. Yeah. Okay, so you're going to meet tonight as well. Brilliant. How was it, first of all, in a stadium? What was the atmosphere like?
It was great. It was just really, really good fun. Very compact stadium. You know, you're kind of right on top of the action. I think we were in row 9, but it almost felt like we were in lane 9. We were that kind of close to the action. It's not even seats. You're sitting on benches. This is all very compact. You're kind of all with everyone. And Kathy Mary, the stadium announcer, did a good job. She was, I think she was right when she said the crowd were very knowledgeable and very good looking, but not sure how she saw me in the crowd. So, no, it was good. You know, the action, great competition as well. Top athletes. The weather was good. Just a really enjoyable night, really.
Yeah.
Connor, how much better is a Diamond League Live than on TV?
Way better. Yeah, it's just there's just so much more on top of things. You're really in the action, especially I think in Europe too. Those kind of meets where you are just closer to the action, like I've been to London, obviously a great stadium, it's sold out, packed, there's like 50,000 there, but I mean, I think in Oslo is maybe only, Stockholm is maybe only 12,000, 15,000, so a lot smaller, you're right on top of the action, and you just feel it a bit more, you can really like feel how fast they're running, and it's that kind of competition, so yeah, definitely worth going to.
Do you know what I think it is as well? And Matt and I were kind of chatting about, we obviously watched the meet on TV, and we were talking about how we kind of, well, I'll speak for myself, but Matt, I think you were saying similar, like for what, it was 2 hours coverage, right? And based off what they're showing on the telly, I had to have other things to do during that 2 hours. Yeah. They're not showing me 2 hours worth of content to actually consume. Yeah. And I'm doing a bit of work on the laptop at the same time, online shopping, whatever it is, playing with a dog, because what is covered in there is not good enough. Whereas when you're there and when it is a knowledgeable crowd, as you say, there are so many things you can kind of pick out and watch. You watch people doing their warm up and their stride.
Totally.
There are interesting aspects, but we need to capture that on coverage so much more.
No, you're totally right. Like I was even kind of struggling to find time to get to the toilet because I was thinking, oh, there's so much coming up. Yeah. I'm enjoying the discus or the pole vault. You're just more aware of the different things kind of going on, because there was quite a lot on the infield as well, with the pole vault, the discus. Mm. So it was packed, and they keep you very engaged, you know. Mm-hmm. And you do kind of see them coming out, and you're kind of getting excited for the next kind of races, which you maybe don't kind of quite capture on TV.
Yeah, you really see them huddled together, don't you? Do their pre-race strides, those final strides. Mate, we've got to get into the Keeley versus Vero matchup. How was that received in the stadium? Were they behind Vero or were they behind Keeley? Who were they rooting for, and what did you make of it?
Probably a bit of a mix, really. I think everyone's just appreciative of that level of competition that they both kind of drew out of each other. For me, yeah, I thought Keeley was going to fly around. I don't know if she did, but Vero really put it up to her and just finished strong that last 50. So I thought it was a great race.
Yeah, that move, for me, the move Keeley made at 300, she won't be making that same mistake again. She obviously just didn't quite know the powers of Vero at the moment. But there is a part of me which is like, for Vero, she's done it a bit too early. Like, now Keeley has really very shown Keeley and us her full cards now, her full set of cards. And going into the Euros now, Keeley knows what she's up against. It's going to make for a great matchup. But I wonder if Vero's just cost herself a place at the London Diamond League as well.
I think now they kind of both kind of know where the fitness is at. I think it will really come down to tactics, you know, making kind of decisive moves at certain points, because they're both within half a second of each other or so. They kind of know where they're at. So it's, do I go at 300? Do I push from 500? Or am I pushing maybe with 150? So it's, the tactics will really come down to it, I think.
It's going to be fascinating. I mean, I don't want to blow my own horn here, Lum, but I've been calling Vero as the next big thing for a little while now. Mm-hmm. And I didn't think she would be this good this year. I didn't. Who knew she was going to run 153? Like, that is an incredible time. But I was looking, I was like, actually 27, 28, she's going to be a problem for Keeley for sure.
Yeah.
Because Keeley's going to have had those, you know, really sort of peak couple years, and she's going to be sort of not hanging on, but just maintaining. But now Vero is really, I mean, it's going to be a fascinating year what plays out between these two now, and who comes out on top at the end of the year. If the world record gets broken, we could see a situation where it kind of goes back and forth. It exchanges hands a little bit. That would be special.
Yeah. I think to get that world record, they're going to need each other, you know, to really kind of drive that, to really press those last 50 meters to kind of really get down there. So it is going to be good. And I had a look at Vero's. Vero's been quicker with 400. She's run 51.03, I think. So interesting that Keeley has been working on 400, and but Vero's already just a little notch ahead of her. So it's going to be good.
Do you look I look at the two and I go, Vero looks like she's got a higher ceiling. She's younger. Is she 3 years younger than Keeley?
I think she's still 22.
Maybe 2 years younger than Keeley then, but younger. And you look at, already her sort of 400 flat speed. And she still doesn't look like the finished article, whereas we know Keeley, you know, Trevor and Jenny have her so well drilled that this really is, you know, she is machine-like. Whereas I still look at Vera, like I see, you know, she reminds me of Radisha a little bit, long loping stride, still quite raw. And if she just keeps in, and you look back at her 2 or 3 years ago when she won the World Juniors and stuff, and she was even greener, you know, she was sort of loping along, and now she's really strengthened up. She's managed to tidy up, you know, her arm carriage and the way her legs cycle through. And I think that is only going to improve. So it's going to be, she looks like she's got a very high ceiling.
Yeah, Dad was a 400 meter sprinter, right? Anyway, like Olympian, so she's grown up with that as well, like grown up with that, I guess, pedigree in the family and that sort of stuff. So it is interesting how quick she is over 400, and I think how good she's been indoors over the past few years as well is always a good sign for people tactically. I know she's not always been winning those races, but she's been there or thereabouts in terms of like European indoors on a circuit in the past few years. And when people can navigate 800 meter indoors, particularly with her height and her stride, you're like, it's always a good sign.
Yeah. Saying that, I do think this is probably a good thing for Kaylee though. I think this will push her on. It'll keep her super motivated, locked in for the training. Like, I was probably most impressed with her kind of comments afterwards.
Same.
You know, how she, I thought that was the hallmark of kind of like greatness, where she's she welcomes that competition. She's not, there's no excuses made. She's ready for it. She's like, okay, yeah, fair, and she's ready to go. So I think, if anything, she'll benefit, hopefully.
Yeah, I gotta agree with you there. She'd already processed that before. By the time she'd done, you know, got to the press, she'd already processed her performance.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was like, blimey, yeah, she was okay with it. She knew she'd recognized the mistakes. I mean, we could see the mistakes she made pushing too hard on the back stretch, but she recognized that straight away. And this is why I think this year, I still think she'll have the beating of her this year. I think tactically she'll be a lot more aware when she's in the race. And this is a season opener for Kaylee. And she bounced off of Rome. You know, there was a travel involved. She went to Rome, 400. Travel, Stockholm, it's a season opener. So I think this year she's certainly still going to have more than Vera, but what is going to be interesting is next year, how those two fare. We'll move on from the eight. The only other thing I would say about the women's eight is we are watching two, you know, absolute monsters, and they are head and shoulders above the rest. But was it in the stadium? I wonder how this was received as well. But for me, I'm like, God, to have people 4 seconds back over 800, and it's still a diamond. It's still an incredible level. Is that a slight concern for sort of women's 800 running, the fact that there's a gap of 4 seconds to third in a diamond league?
I think it's just an opportunity for those third or fourth places, just, or maybe the fifth or sixth runners normally kind of press on, try to nab a medal. That's almost a different race in itself. Some opportunities there for maybe not the world beaters there, so... In the stadium, you were totally drawn into the competition. Like we were on our feet pretty much the whole race, kind of fully engaged. So you were, and obviously they were going at it right down to the line. So it was pretty exciting.
Yeah, well, what's going to get difficult, I think, is when these races keep going through at 55 now. That is, again, if you're a top flight female trying to run 156, 157, the last thing you want to be doing is going through in 55. But that's kind of, that's what those two are going to do. They're going to go 55 point, right?
Similar, just maybe on the women's steeplechase. You know, I think the pacing on that was a little bit, you know, it was for the eventual winner. And then there was a kind of almost a second race for Elise, you know, and I kind of once the Tunisian lady, she won it. I kind of I saw your comments last week about Elise, and I was thinking, can't you kind of make that next step up? And I was thinking, once the Tunisian lady got away, I was thinking, can Elise just kind of win this second pack? And if she could do that, that'd be a great run. That's what she did. So,
yeah. How did she look, mate? Because we didn't get any of Elise Thorner on coverage. We would to watch another thing in the front. So, but it was fantastic performance from the winner. Don't get me wrong, but yeah, it'd have been nice to know what was going on behind.
Exactly. That's what being there live, you do get those duality of races where obviously you've got the leader at front, but you can really kind of keep an eye on the pack. And that's what I was thinking, can at least win this pack, you know, and it's there was a whole host of Europeans in there, some Americans. So I thought she handled herself really well to come out second in the Diamond League, get some points and kind of acquit herself at that level. Very promising.
Yeah. Something I want to debate is the way the men's steeple, obviously that was a very different race to what we saw in Rabat a week earlier. But we're pretty much seeing the same names. And obviously, when you have a race of 756, 757, and a week later you get them all in Stockholm, there was a couple men who got subbed out and a couple who got subbed in. That's always natural. But pretty much it was 15 of the same names, and they run around, and it was still a good watch. I mean, we sort of got 200 meters of it discus, 200 meters of it discus, so that was frustrating. Okay. But it's more... Is this a drawback to the Diamond League? The fact that we just see the same 10 a week apart go and do the same race, and of course they're going to run a bit slower. They're not going to fancy it. It was a bit more of a duel. I've got to give credit to Albacali. He is just so consistent. He's always winning where he can. He's only been beaten. You can count on one hand how many times he's been beaten. But should they spread? I've never understood why they decide to put, you know, two steeples a week apart when they've only got four through the whole season, and
they can get away with not having steeples at the sharp end, mate. That's what it is.
Because they pack two in, like, and the same with the 5K though. They'll pack two in really close together. I mean, last year we had Oz. It hasn't happened this year, but we had Oslo and Stockholm really close together last year as well. And I don't get why they do it with those distance races, because then they just get the same 12, same 15 men line up, and they're knackered.
So, because I think Albacali, he sat off it, like he wasn't there. Pressing, he sat off it, just took it relaxed and kind of worked his way through, and won it in a
8-10
in a different way than we normally see, because they probably are tired coming off racing hard where there's more pressure on them in the back there. And
this way, if they are going to have the races so close together, I think that's where they have to have a completely different feel. You know, say, okay, we gave 15 men a chance that weekend. We'll give a brand new 15 a chance this weekend, and go see what those guys could do. Or you just spread it out a little bit more.
Yeah. So that's why I like it to be in the middle. This is where they might have some guys move from 15 to 3 or 15 to 5, where you kind of get that crossover. Because I think it's a nice step up, say, from Almgren doing the 15 to maybe moving up to the 5 now tonight in Oslo.
Yeah, look, someone who we saw on the Diamond League circuit the first time on Sunday was Luchtenhaus over 800 metres, and ridiculously good performance from him. I think he's shown that he wasn't just a flash in the pan, world indoors.
Yeah.
And that he can actually really compete on this stage. And for me, it was the confidence that he ran with. He ran like a proper world champion, not someone who almost won it out of nowhere. I think that's fair enough to say.
Yeah, I think he's delivering on his potential. You know, I think we'll have him build the next big thing, but he's already there. You know, he is world indoor champ. He's won his first time in the league. He is there. It'll be interesting now, I think, see how he goes against Wang Yongli and different few other characters. But yeah, how he handles himself on the track and off the track, I think. It's just super impressive all around. You know, he's super level-headed when racing. You know, I think he learned a lot from Tokyo. I think he really learned a lot from there, and he's a different athlete this year.
Thoughts on Patterson's run and Whiteman's runs?
Patterson's are good. You know, I think he closed well to go second time, sub 144. I think, I knew, because I saw him in Belfast. I thought he looked good over 1500. I thought maybe the strength was there. And I spoke to him after Belfast, and I was maybe kind of asking, are you thinking of maybe moving up to 15? But he wasn't, didn't really seem like that was a serious option or move this year. So it was really, really good to see him running 143, but it's still a way off to try and get on to that, get back on the podium roster, or even almost make a final. Because, you know, these World Champs, Olympics, that semi-final is probably the hardest race, really. And the kind of a Diamond League is probably a similar enough standard to say an Olympic semi-final, really, you know, where there's maybe missing a few guys. So
I think the worry, what will frustrate Patterson is just this ability to be involved from the offset. It does. He is an incredible athlete in a 143. It's one of his fastest times ever, and we're very early on in the season. I'm sure he'll get quicker. He's going to be a great spot for Euros, but even at Euros, it's making sure that when he gets there at commies and stuff, he's involved in that thing from the get-go, and he's not too far back. He's not getting pushed around. Like, Whiteman came up on him with 300 to go, and of course he gets all those guys back on the home stretch, but he comes fourth. Yeah. And you know, the race is just a little bit further up the road. So for me, and I'm sure he will, but he just needs to address the ability to just get in the mixer from earlier on in these races. You know, that first 200, when you break, he just needs to be in a position where he can strike for gold. That's going to be his only difference. I have no doubts he can get a medal at the Europeans, but if he wants gold, yeah. I think he's just got to pay a little bit closer attention.
It's a cleaner run, kind of in those kind of top two, three spots. If you're in the pack, it's just messing. They're big guys too, you know.
Yeah. His fitness must be there. Yeah, his fitness. Yeah. He's run 1:43 in quite a messy race, actually. So he must be in great shape. But on Lichtenhouse, boys, is one. I love the way he's 17, and he's just going for it. He's not holding back. Sometimes I think we get these, you know, you get these huge phenoms, and it's like, oh, can we protect them? You know, and people almost overthink and strategize and try and plan this pathway where they're still going to peak at 26. I mean, this guy's running 1:42 and winning Diamond League at 17 years of age. Like, just do it. Just run with it. And I kind of respect the fact he is. And he's just going to eat up everything in his path. And I rate that decision by obviously his coach, himself, support team, whatever. I have no doubt we're going to start to learn and see a lot more about how this guy trains, how he approaches the sport. There's a few workouts out there already, but is there anything you can learn from a 17-year-old, or do you just have to step back and just go, actually, he's 17 years of age, he's a freak. Of course, he's doing some training, he's training hard, but at this stage, it's like a lot of it must just be on him and bloody raw talent.
Yeah. I think what you could learn is not to complicate things, you know, just keep it fun in an essence, keep it pure, and also just seek out competition, you know, seek out kind of the better races and just kind of keep climbing the ranks. Because similar to what you just said, I do kind of get a little bit, people always talk about athletes' potential, but they're already there, you know, like they're not going to get so much better. An athlete's kind of career at that top level, it is only a short window, so you got to capitalize on it. And I think he is doing that. Like, I don't think we can say, oh, what's he going to run when he's 23 or 24? He's already running these times. Like, he can't physiologically get too much better, really. You know, like, he is at the top already. So, yeah, it's great to see. I think, yeah, learning is just maybe keeping it fun, competition, and not overcomplicate things.
Yeah, I think, look at Jakob now, right? Jakob capitalized in those years, and he's had an amazing career. And even if he doesn't ever race to the level again, he's had an amazing career. Whereas if people had held Jakob back and said, no, you're going to have to wait, maybe we wouldn't have had the Jakob we did over the past few years. Look, Americans winning middle distance races as well. Nagus, top performance from him, 3:30. Cam Myers just behind. He looked like he was going to win that race for a while. And then someone I want to chat about as well, Vince Ciatti in fourth is quietly going about, I guess, a bit of a comeback, like someone we've not seen run.
Comeback. He's announced himself. I would say he's.
I remember the last time he ran for the US.
You're thinking.
I don't know if he has.
Yeah, mate. You're thinking of his OTC days back in the day when he first joined. Like, I think him and Gawley were like some of the first to join. Join Mark Rowland's group, right before that folded. But that was pre COVID, pre pandemic. But no, he's having a breakthrough year. He's not having a comeback. Yeah. He's having a breakthrough year, no doubt about that. Very impressive with what he's doing.
It is, I think, because I don't know if he has made a US team.
You're not. He's 31. Yet. He's 31 now, Ciatti.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. I mean, Wilfolk, yeah, Ciatti, good job. Kessler, you know, 3:31. You know, this 1500 is, yeah, they run around at 3:30 and they file back. Timothy Cherrett is doing a great job for his age. Cam Myers was impressive. I'd like to see Cam Myers. This is what frustrates me a little bit is Cam Myers, for some reason, found himself at the front and was just happy to just keep pushing and keep pouring it on. I would like to see him just try and win. And obviously, he probably was trying to win and he thought the best way to do that was in that manner. But he was setting himself up a little bit. And I'm like, mate, just get the win. Just relax a bit. You know, kick these boys down. Test yourself against them. Don't just set yourself up. And he's only just been pipped by Nagus. But
I know.
I don't know why people feel like if they get to the front of the Diamond League, they have to just keep this pace pour on the pace. And this is what we didn't see in the women's race. And it was so much better to watch, you know, seeing that women's race slow up a bit, Georgia Bell's big last lap.
Because I was thinking, had it been Jared pressing from the front and kind of Cam sitting on his shoulder, I think that it would have reversed.
You know, he would have backed off, yeah.
Yeah, I think Cam may have had him just on that last stretch if Jared was the one doing the pressing. So
definitely.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they go. But I thought how Whiteman ran in the 800, you know, 2:144s. I thought he would have been dangerous in this kind of 3:30 race. I thought that would have suited him. So see how they all go then in the mile.
He'll have a chance at a mile tonight, hey. But one man that we should talk about, Ben Clarke, pacing. Very good from him, yeah. But wasn't going to talk about him. It was Jake Hayward, actually, 3:35. And just, he was a bit aggressive, wasn't he?
Oh, he got right out behind the Pacers, in third. And I thought, maybe a touch aggressive for his coming back. But shows that he has the confidence. I actually bumped into him in View Park in Cardiff there for a run early in the year. And we had a brief chat, shared some miles together. And he was... the confidence was there. He knew he was going to get back to this level, and it's kind of great to see it come to fruition, and then also to see him racing. I thought with that confidence, maybe tactically might not have been the best decision, but good to see him put him in the position to give himself a chance.
Mm. I think in his head he's probably thinking, "Oh, I've had a good couple openers, and now I need to capitalize on the fact that I'm in a Diamond League."
But a Diamond League is to step up. Yeah,
I know.
The way you approach that is you go, well, I know that if I come eighth in this race, I'm going to run 3:31.
Yeah, take a ride.
Mm. So that was interesting, the fact that he clearly feels like he stepped on from his early season races of 3:34 and he wanted a bit quicker today. And so I'll be intrigued to see where he goes next.
I think it was in 2023 when he ran in the... I think it was Rabat Diamond League, and then also in Prefontaine in the mile. He got out hot then as well. Mm. He was right behind the Pacers. I can remember watching him thinking, he's up for this. Mm. So maybe just how he prefers to race.
Good memory. Hey, let's preview tonight then. What are you most looking forward to? You're going to be in Oslo. What a week you're having, by the way. Has it been an expensive trip to Scandinavia?
It's been good. So it's actually my dad's birthday today.
Oh, happy birthday to the old man.
Yeah, so shout out to my dad, happy birthday. He's also a listener of the pod, so he'll be listening to it back and he'll be laughing. So yeah, my dad's birthday, he's 60 today. Obviously, he's a coach, he used to run himself, and yeah, he's a big athletics fan. So we kind of grew up watching Diamond Leagues, and we thought, one day we'd like to get out and do a bit of a doubleheader. So this is the week that we chose, and it's been good. I had a good time in Stockholm, lovely city. Got some nice runs, just chilling out Oslo. Now today we ran there this morning together, and we're just going to hang out Bislett tonight. Yeah, I definitely recommend it. It's nice.
Mm. No, beautiful. Certainly on the hit list. Haven't been to as many Diamond Leagues as I wanted to, actually, but they just work so well when they're so close together. These two, you could kill two birds with one stone.
The access in Stockholm, just to the track itself, was crazy. The morning after, we went for a run and we got on the track. We did a lap of the track.
Wow.
No one batted an eyelid. We were just there, did a lap, dipped out again, ran around the forest.
Really?
It was cool. You don't really get that access. And even afterwards, as I said, we kind of stood around because usually at these races, at home, we're like the last people to leave because we're too busy talking or just whatever's going on. So naturally, in Stockholm, we were also the last people to leave. And obviously, then the athletes are then warming up or sorry, cooling down on the infield. And we just got chatting to a few of them. Spoke to Cam, spoke to Almgren. And they're just right there because, you're literally in lane nine if you're on the... If in on the front row. So it was cool. So hopefully business is the same tonight.
So the meet ends, and then obviously as soon as the meet ends, everyone clears out. The athletes then all come back out onto the track, cool down.
Yeah.
Any post race sessions? They're very popular.
The only one that I could see that was doing a session was Jimmy Gressier. Most of the guys were jogging, and a few strides thrown in from looked like Robert Farkin, but the rest of them were just jogging. I thought a few of them would have done a few more sessions, but. I guess because maybe a tight enough turnaround for tonight, really.
Yeah, or was there a nice park there? Were they out in the park maybe, doing a few rips and tempos?
So, yeah, there is a forest behind in Stockholm, which is really nice. You could run around there for a good few miles, so I think they may have been out there.
Hey, big one tonight then, men's 800. Who's going to win this? You've got Wanyonyi, Luchtenhaus, and Arop all in the same race. Of course, you've got Tuao and Bol and others as well, but the three biggest names... in men's 800 meter running right now, who wins this one tonight?
I'm going to go to Cooper. I think he's running hot. I think the confidence is there. I'd like to see him win. And I think similar to what we kind of said about Cam. I think he doesn't need to do too much. You know, just win. You know, sit back, let those guys press, sit on the shoulder, and just win. You know, I think he can do that, and he's got the tools. But it's going to be exciting either way.
Yeah.
What about you guys?
The way he ran Sunday, it's hard to look against him. But 800 meter running,
I think he might be a bit leggy.
Changes so often that. It kind of, I would be very impressed if he wins again.
Same here. I think he might be a little fatigued, a little leggy. The other two are very, very experienced. They're used to traveling. They're used to putting 142s back to back in a week, you know, in a matter of days. And so I actually think they might have the better of him in tonight. So I'm going to be intrigued. We'll move on to the men's 5K just quickly as well. And do you know what it took to get into this race? I think you had to be a 15th fastest in this field, is about 13.04 or something. So virtually the whole field come into this. I think definitely 12 men sub 13 minutes. That's what it takes to get into a Diamond League now, which is just mind-boggling stuff. But it is stacked. You've pretty much, I'm looking at it just thinking, who are we missing, really? We're probably missing Gressier. And other than that, we're probably missing a couple of others. I know I've missed a few, but
Cole.
Cole
Hooker and Ingebrigtsen, I guess, if you want to bring him into the fold. But you've got all the best Americans, all the guys who have run between 12:45 and 12:55 in blanks. Grant Fisher, Kai Roberts is in there as well, Isaac Kimeli, Almgren. You know, you've got guys who are making the podium at the Worlds last year, so this field is stacked.
I'm interested to see Parker Wolf. You know, I think he had a good indoor season, ran really well at World Cross, just to see how he makes this next step up to this level, how he goes. Should be exciting.
Yeah, I wonder how Almgren's going to be after that 15. I know we weren't expecting him to run anything like amazing or really feature at the front of that race, but I think he'll have been a bit annoyed with what he finished up with, about 3:36 on Sunday. So it'd be interesting to see how he bounces back, obviously over one of his preferred distances.
Because he was tired in, was it Xiamen, the second Diamond League?
Yeah, he
dropped out, I think. Yeah, so he didn't really get anywhere near it in the 15. So hopefully he's not too fatigued.
Yeah, I was surprised how many times he attempted the European record over 10K on the road. I think he had three attempts. I was just thinking in the sort of during the winter from Valencia, then he did Laredo, and then I think he might have done one more. I thought that's a bit. That just seemed like was it Castellón as well? I can't remember, but. I just thought he was getting a bit carried away with chasing these road 10Ks in the winter. I was surprised he went for as long as he did. And I wonder if that's affected his season preparation, especially early season now. But hey, go on, man.
I was going to say, the road 10K, I think it does take a lot out of you. You know, the recovery from that, it's draining, you know. So I totally agree with you on that point. Yeah. Mm. Hoping he hasn't maybe burned his matches a bit too early.
I know, because I thought he was always someone he's a powerful runner. You looked at him and you thought he's, with his 800 meter background, even his 1500 background, you're like, he's going to be, I had him down as a real dark horse this year to sort of over the next few years to really go on to dominate. So I felt like he had the speed over the 15 to do some serious damage in the five, but he's almost gone too far the other way, it seems.
I think he's sensible though. You know, I think he'll figure it out. He'll definitely be there in Birmingham.
Yeah. Oh, he will. Lum, women's 3000, Hannah Nuttall, Megan Keith, Ines Fitzgerald. Ines has been quiet.
Yeah. I was just looking at the side of this now, thinking this is the British champs 3000 meters in terms of having those three in there. And it's exciting. They're all around 8:30. Megan Keith's obviously I guess we consider her to be the standout athlete there, but Hannah Nuttall the past few years, Ines in terms of her ceiling and how much she seems to improve year on year, or even like from cross country to track at the age she is, it's going to be really interesting to see who comes out on top out of those three tonight.
Yeah, and I'm just looking if they've all accepted their entry for the champs over 5K. Ines has, Megan Keith has, Hannah Nuttall hasn't. I'm sure she will. I would love to see. Oh, it's going to be great to see how they match up. It's a big psychological battle tonight for them over 3K. But to watch Ines, Nuttall and Keith go head to head in Birmingham in 10 days' time, that's going to be very exciting because we haven't, I don't think we've lacked that real jewel in the women's 5000. We've had great depth. We've always had people who box off the qualifying standard, but I think we've lacked that real head-to-head for a while now, and hopefully they all turn up in Birmingham and they turn out. So it's going to be interesting, one, how they do tonight, but more importantly, how that affect things for 10 days' time now.
Yeah, and I think obviously on a schedule as well tonight, you can't talk about Oslo without the Dream Mile. We mentioned Whiteman's in there. A whole host of athletes have been racing, obviously in Stockholm are there as well. So Farkin's in there, Chariot's in there, Kostrom comes into the mix, Habs is in there, Kessler comes from Stockholm as well. Nagus, can he get, what, three wins in what, 10 days? Nader's in there, Nordas is in there, so... Yeah, that's going to be unreal. Connor, I presume this is what you're most looking forward to. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it's got to
be. Yeah, miles. Of course, yeah. I think, obviously, Bias, Irish representative in there too with Cosgrin. So
yeah.
He's always dangerous too. So nothing would surprise me with Cosgrin. The mile, you know, will be exciting. Can't wait.
Mate, the meet record, 344.9, El Garouge. I wonder if that is under threat.
I don't know. I think we may need more of a natural kind of front runner like Jakob to really be pressing down to get those times, but you never know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe fancy for it.
Joe, I would like to see, I would actually like to see Myers try and win this one and focus on winning rather than, you know, he'd already soloed a 3:29 in Australia on his own. I feel he doesn't need to do that. He shouldn't be getting to the front of Diamond Leagues and pressing the pace. Like, I just feel anyone who does that, it's just all you're doing is just dragging the whole field. But it seems like men and in the women's race as well, they feel obliged. They get to the front and they just have to sit on the wave lights. And that's what frustrates. If the wave lights weren't there, they wouldn't. The pace would drop off and they wouldn't. Things would get quite tactical going into that last 300. It would make for a fascinating last lap. But I would, obviously, Whiteman's in there, so we want to see him run well. But I think for me, this is a race where Myers needs to sort of show that he can win against big dogs.
Totally. I think, you know, I'm not desperate to see them run super fast either. It is more just that matchup. So the competition, which, you know, and it's a competition in athletics, which is really special with it. And that's from whether it is at a Diamond League or if it's at a Watford. It's just to see those battles with the last lap. I think that makes it exciting at any level. So to see the world's best kind of go at it and just kind of duke it out, we don't need them to be pressing or really going for it. But I think, yeah, if Myers can just win, you know, which is obviously harder, easier said than done, but yeah, I agree.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, Connor, we'll let you go get ready for tonight. Thanks so much for joining us wish you a great evening out of Diamond League, mate.
No, thanks guys, really enjoyed it, and thanks for having me on.
Pleasure.
Cheers, bud. Catch you soon.
See you guys.
There we go then, man. Pretty comprehensive review and preview of tonight's action. I don't think we need to talk too much more about it, Diamond League, do we? I think that's it.
I think that's boxed us off in terms of events. Mate, Ekiden's coming up though on Friday. You're obviously involved. What's your title these days with the Ekiden?
Athletics director, mate.
Athletic director. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So, no, it's been, no, I, yeah.
Go
I
on, talk about what it is, first of all, because yeah, I think it's still something that I know on this podcast we like to... We know you guys listen and knowledgeable, but the UK Ekiden anyway is still not a household event yet, but it's certainly getting there. So tell us a bit about it, mate.
Yeah, I mean, I got involved in this a couple of years back when it first started, and very informally, and just offering a little bit of advice here and there. But as the years have gone by, I have been a lot more involved in it and trying to guide it and steer it alongside an amazing team, by the way, to look after that sort of performance side of the race, the university race to it. And I think for me, one of the reasons I'm most passionate about the Ekiden and just the fact it's university competition full stop, obviously I'm involved at Oxford, so maybe I have a bias to university competitions, but actually the university racing scene is scarce. There's just a lack of touch points through the year. I mean, for 90% of athletes at university, there's one race and it's Bucks. Of course, there's a few varsity races as well. It's massive at Oxford. Obviously, we prepare meticulously for it. And I know other universities have a varsity race as well. So there's an opportunity to get your uni vest on then and compete towards something which has huge weighting. But really, it's so you could say there's varsity and there's Bucks. And then for a lot of athletes, Bucks track is a no-goer and Bucks indoors as well, because it's limited, right? Two per event. I know on the track you're allowed four if you hit a certain standard, but again, it's quite limited. And so I just think when you've gone to university to really, you know, obviously academics is a big part, but also sport is a massive part of your life at university. And as a distance runner, you've got one or two competitions a year to really focus on and get excited about, and that are going to have an impact, and you're going to feel a part of something. And I think that is a massive shame. And it's one of the reasons why university distance running, athletics, track and field, cross country, sorry, I think are always going to struggle to generate eyeballs, storylines, and eventually sort of sponsors and investment, because there's only one, two touch points through the year. And it's very easy to sleep on our sport for 11 months and focus on the, you know, the other side of our sport, which is all the club athletic stuff and everything like that. And so that's, I guess, the first reason why I'm so excited, because it's just another opportunity for university students to compete for a team. It's five men, it's five women. It's, you know, 10 runners per team. It's 112 kilometers along the Thames path. Arbitrary distances, they vary from 5 and a bit K to 14 and a bit K. Some legs detour off the Thames path and are very hilly. Some are obviously very flat. Multi-terrain, some are paved. And I just think it teaches athletes, in a day where we just seek perfection all the time, it teaches them to perform in non-perfect conditions. And actually, that is how you develop, you know, and it's old school. It's pure. You just get from A to B as fast as possible. It's how a lot of people started out in the sport. You know, you just go for a run and you just hammer the damn thing. I can't remember growing up with my brother, we would race through the old strawberry tunnels near our house and treat them like track lanes. And that was just fun. And it was, you know, you weren't worried about anything else. You were just hammering. And I feel like that's quite unique. And we are losing those sort of authentic races in that way. And actually, it's a very good, you know, it's going to enhance and develop athletes a lot more. There's plenty of time to run BMCs. You know, I know the Ickenden is this Friday. I know that the Loughborough Grand Prix is on the Saturday, the London 5000 on the Saturday. It's a busy weekend of racing. It's a week before British Champs. But actually, for a lot of university students, British Champs is not on the cards. Mm. And why not make memories with your teammates for the greater good of your club as well, and bring that exposure, bring that storyline, bring those eyeballs to your club. And I guess That's what I feel. That's why I feel passionate about the performance side of the race itself, but then also what the Ickenden can become outside of just a race. I mean, we want to give back to the universities, full stop. The prize money is 3K, 2K, 1K for the top three teams, which we feel is makes a difference. You know, that really does stretch to a club when you have even just that injection of cash that helps with booking buses and transport and just covering the operational costs of a club. The winning team also gets a trip to Fontenay, courtesy of ASICS, for a week. You stay at the ASICS house, which is an amazing prize. And, you know, whoever wins will hopefully be able to tag on a couple weeks either side of that and make the most of their free week in France. And it's the relationships and the network they can build with the corporate companies as well. You know, there's going to be a bunch of career talks on the day, because obviously the race is 6-7 hours long. It's 112 kilometers. And so when you're not out there pounding and running your leg, there's an opportunity to really mingle, get to know the corporates and share those storylines in. For the universities beyond the club, I am surprised, we're working on it, but I'm surprised more sort of vice chancellors and more senior figures at the universities haven't bought into this, because they've all been invited. But Alex Betts, the pro vice chancellor at Oxford, will run on the storytellers team. He's very much bought into it and can see the sort of wider attraction this event could have. I mean, the winning team will feature in the Financial Times. And in fact, all the universities have featured in the FT in the build up to this race. So what I'm hoping is, I guess, long term, sorry to waffle on about this, but I've been sort of involved in it for the last 12 months, the last 18 months, the last 2 years even, is that actually it's a bit of a platform and a catalyst for universities to become the clubs, especially to become more attractive to sponsors. They're getting in the face of Science and Sport. They're getting in the face of ASICS and showing, hey, this is what we're about. It's another attraction. It's another race that has huge meaning. Because at the end of the day, you know, when you look at it, it's basically who's got the best distance squad in the country, right? You put out five men and five women together and see who can cover 112 kilometers the best. So that's what I hope happens. off the back of it, because brands are throwing £10,000 or £5,000 to activate at a run club, you know, to do some 5Ks in the build up to London Marathon. And it's like, actually, that money would stretch so far if you were to give that to a university club. I mean, obviously, if you were to give it to an athletics club as well, but a university club, it would, you know, it would cover pretty much all of their operational costs. It would help with coaching. It would help with kit. It would, and you would buy loyalty, I think, far easier than people in London or wherever these run clubs are with the disposable income, who are happy to buy Asics one week and the next week go wear Nike and Adidas and whatever, right? I think you would buy that sort of brand loyalty a lot more. And so, yeah, I suppose that's, you know, again, looking a little bit further down the line, that's, I hope universities become a lot more attractive to investment.
Mm. Mate, absolutely. So that's going down Friday. How can people, I guess, keep up to date with what's going on?
So look, it's going to be all over socials. Just head to the UK Academy page on social media. There's a website. There's an awesome tracking link, which is, it's a very exciting way to follow the race. There isn't a live stream for the reasons of it's an 8-hour race, and it's logistically would be very difficult to cover. But there is these awesome, every runner has a GPS unit, and so you can track their dots along the route. And I think that is, I remember last year just following it, it is very exciting. You can see teams clearly moving up and gaining on others, teams dropping back. And yeah, that track is updated every minute. So it's very accurate. It's not a predicted split. You know, they're not going through timing maps or anything like that. It is literally just a tracker on the screen. Obviously, there's live results as well. So all of that information is on the UK Ekiden social media channels.
Yeah. And which teams are running? Have you got a full list? How many universities we got?
Well, there's going to be 16 British universities. There's one from Japan, Ritsu Makin, who came over last year as well. And yeah, I go through it. I mean, we had to have a bit of qualification this year, just because sort of limited to keeping it at that sort of 15, 16 on the Thames path. Yeah. So you've got Cardiff, you've got Durham, you've got Imperial, Kings, Loughborough, Newcastle, the Japanese Uni Ritsu Makin, you've got Royal Holloway, UCL, Bath, Birmingham, Bristol, Cambridge, Edinburgh, Exeter, Leeds, Oxford. So pretty much, you know, we've tried to make it so it's, while there was a qualification, people submit their times to run this year. The top eight were invited back. And again, the top eight this year will auto qualify for next year, but it's pretty much the best universities in the country.
Yeah. So there you go. And if you're obviously alumni of any of them or have interest in any of those, then obviously you can track along, see how they're getting on Friday.
Yeah, let me give you some times that we expect the winners to come home for about, the race is going to start 8 a.m. from Windsor, literally in the shadow of Windsor Castle on the river there. And we expect the winners to return about between two and half past two, depending on how fast they run. So get yourself down. There's a huge event village. There's food, there's drink, there's music, there's Japanese drums, DJs. It's going to be a pretty cool Friday afternoon. So even if you can only make it for 3-4 o'clock, still going to be plenty of teams coming through, come and mingle, hang out. And it's an awesome way for the students really to just cap off their academic year.
Yeah. Post exams, et cetera. Nice.
Yeah.
You're going to be running, mate? Is there a little staff race or?
It's not, mate. No, I am very much going to be helping out with logistics operations and doing a bit of announcing as well. So my hands will be tied on race day, plus trying to sort of cheer on the Oxford team and make sure they're in check.
Yeah, do coaching, I hope.
Yeah, I have to leave them to their own devices a little bit on this one. I have to let them just get out there and crack on.
There you go. I mean, I was gonna be my segment into Go Wad, but if you were running, but gonna have to just slot that in somewhere else. But mate, I actually I think I sprained my ankle.
Sunday. I've got a tight calf. I ran 12 miles. First, I ran in over 6 months on Sunday. Had a great long run. Felt really smooth. But since then, yeah, my calf's just been flared up. So I've been hammering. I mean, he's got some good ankle mobility, mate. I've been hammering the calf exercises. So really just isolating that.
Yeah, I need to put in about my injury. I need to log that in the app and get some rehab going for me. But I was being good. I was out with a dog in the woods, and then rolled the ankle. So that'll teach me for training too much.
That'll teach you for going off road, mate.
Well, that's all I do.
Stay to the paved paths.
I did do one running butte part last week. But yeah. I normally get on the trails.
Yes.
Trails, Casio, dog pulling me around.
Goated. No, you're right. I think that's what we love, isn't it? We go, well, if you've got a particular area that's just a little bit tight, you literally just say, smash that area and it will give you 20 odd stretches, which focus on that area and obviously anything which can have a knock-on effect to your ankle, to your calf, whatever it may be. So it's really, really beneficial. So if you haven't already, we've been talking about it for long enough on this podcast, go and check out GoWod as a brilliant recovery platform.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Right. Any more races we need to chat through?
Well, I'm going to be obviously at the Icoden on Friday. And then after that, the London 5000 is certainly quite exciting. And I will be there on the Saturday. And just looking at those elite races, they've pulled together a pretty stacked field. You've got Butchie in there. You've got Gabriel Marion in there. You've got Alfie Manthorpe. You've got James Kingston. You've got a couple young Europeans, actually. You've got Sebastian Lorstad. Remember him? Was that the kid who ran that amazing time in Armagh at 16, 13, 45 or whatever? Daft Jones, Dom Nolan. Got a bunch of Scandinavians who couldn't get in the Oslo 5000, clearly. Magnus Uyen, Charlie Brisley. So just looking now, wow. If you go on paper, you've got 15, 16, sub 14 minutes in that men's race, the London 5000. That's where I'm going to be on Saturday. And obviously the women's race is another stacked. It's another stacked lineup. Melissa Courtney Bryant's in there. Hannah Klein, Verity Ockenden, Haga Kearney. Wow. So the top four there are very, very good. Then you've got a lot more women just around that sort of 16 minute mark. But I hope they all turn out. That's going to be fascinating. You've got a couple good under 20 races as well, over 3,000, where anyone who's, I think it was sub 820 and sub 940 gets New Balance kit. And it's going to be paced that, you know, they're going to be going after those world junior standards as well. So that's where I'll be. But the BMC Grand Prix is also on Saturday. Great lineups. Look, we're a week out from British Champs. We're going to see how everyone's matching up, how everyone's racing. And then we're going to have those British Champs start list. I mean, that's next week. Next week is the British Champs episode. Shit, everyone call in. Let's give your predictions. British Champs next Wednesday morning, we'll talk about it. We'll preview what should be a fantastic weekend. It's crept on us really quickly, I think. We've had a few races to talk about and then it's bang, British Champs. And so, yeah, what are we most looking forward to? Where are the matchups going to be? Are we going to see the big names? Is Josh Kerr going to bother doing it? Is George Mills going to do it? Kind of has to this year.
You think
in the 5000?
We say this every year. Oh yeah, it's good because we now got a year where no one has an excuse not to be there because they've not also
feel like look on the. I mean, George Bell's accepted her entry. Keely's probably the one athlete who probably won't do this. She might do the 400. Don't know, but I know that Georgia Bell's committed to the British Champs. But actually, everyone else, I'm like, they kind of have to. Whiteman probably doesn't have to after that world moto. Actually, Whiteman probably doesn't have to bother.
Yeah. I mean, Keely really should. I just think they all should.
I think they will. I think they will because it's early enough in the season. You know? It's far enough out. Yeah, it's. What did she win last year?
What did she win last year?
World indoors this year though. But yeah.
Yeah, but it. I don't know. I just think like we can't. It just makes a mockery of the British champs. It's fine. Like, we just scrap the whole thing if we want, but and just pick a team. That's fine if you want to go that way as a sport. But
I want to see a great matchup in the men's five. I want Dave Mullarkey there. I want Scott Beattie there. I want George Mills there. I want a fantastic matchup. James West obviously opened his season. I want that men's five to be stacked. No one avoiding it. And I think they all have to race. Because if they want to go to the Europeans, they will have to race. So, yeah. And the same, like I said earlier, in the women's five. Same kettle of fish, women's 15. Yeah, it's going to be, because that standard is slightly slower for the Europeans than it is for the world, it means that more people have it, more people are capable of going and getting it. And so I love that because then the champs is going to be much more exciting because there's a lot more on the line, a lot more at stake. And so, yeah, that's what we're going to be previewing next week.
Can't absolutely, mate. Wait. Absolutely. So, yeah, send us a message on Instagram if you want to feature. Either you want to come on live, as Connor did today, or if you want to just send a message in and we can read out your thoughts, feelings, and we'll sort it out for Wednesday morning next week. So the 17th, and mate, and World Cup starts as well. England are playing on 17th next week. So
yeah, they are. Yeah, I've bloody hell, mate. In the Swiss,
they'll be calling this "Stick to Running" after me and you just spend the whole podcast talking about football. But
mate, I don't know. I mean, I've got Tunisia in the old sweepstake at Oxford, so yeah, I'll have to tune into a few of their games. I might have to look at their timetable, what group they're in, but actually I'm looking at the World Cup, 48 teams. It's probably about 20 teams, maybe more, who shouldn't even be in the World Cup really. So I'm just going to tune in. I'll watch England in the groups. I'll watch Tunisia, and then I'll probably just wait till maybe the last 16, probably the quarterfinals, to start getting excited about it.
You say this now, and then you'll be watching every single game.
What have we got in our group? Panama.
Croatia, Ghana, and what's the third game?
It's Panama, mate. Fuck, we got Croatia and Ghana. There's probably a world where we don't make it out of the group, actually, looking at that.
Got Croatia on Tuesday. No, on Wednesday, sorry. And then Ghana the week after.
Shit, so we've got Croatia 9 o'clock kickoff. That's nice. Yeah, I could do that. Finish coaching. And then Tuesday 23rd. Hey. We know what day that is, Lumsky.
Yeah, mate. We'll have to get a big screen out.
What do you reckon, people? Lum's tying the knot that day. Will Katie put
the Ghana game on. We'll have to see. I don't know if I want to start my marriage off with that, to be honest.
England, Ghana, 9 p.m. on your wedding day. Yeah, stoked for that one, mate.
We'll see how the night's going. See how much of a good mood everyone's in.
we'll end up in some sticky bar watching that. Can't wait. And then when's the next game? 27th of June, Saturday 27th. That's Panama. Yeah, pretty tough group actually, but
yeah, let's hope that's not the end of it after that one.
Right, we'll see you next week for that British Champs preview.
Yeah, send us a message. Thanks for listening to us. Catch you guys very, very soon.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.